Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The Sports Virus Podcast.
Welcome to the Sports Virus Podcast, everybody. I'm Joe Castellano along with Ray Woodson, and we're brought to you, as always, by Kane's Tire in San Rafael, where they've had the lowest prices in Marin County for over 60 years. And we're brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Well, Ray, we were just talking about the weather before we started this podcast, and it's around 11 a.m. here in Marin County. It's around 90 degrees already. We're just getting hit with this heat wave, and it would be really a great time to go take a splash in the pool. But you know what? Can't go splashing with the Splash Brothers anymore.
I see what you did there.
And I feel really sad about that. I mean, that's the first part. It's the emotional part that Klay Thompson is no longer a Warrior and he's a Dallas Maverick. It still hasn't completely sunk in for me a couple of days later. What about you, Ray?
Well, my head is accepting it. My heart is not. And you know, I'll preface all my commentaries by saying I might not be an unbiased commentator on this because he might be my favorite Warrior of all time. And, you know, that's covering a lot of great players, including Steph. I just love the way he went about his business. But last year, it wasn't the same Clay in a few ways, and things just kind of unraveled. And I'd recommend people read Ramona Shelburne's article at the ESPN website to get an idea of what was going on. So many levels to this in the last year or two. But really, the genesis of this is when he got hurt. You know, when he got the knee injury and then the Achilles. You know, that's really what started this whole process of Clay disengaging from the Warriors. Because, you know, he came back and helped them win a title, but he wasn't quite the same player last year. And clearly those injuries took their toll on somebody who's 34. He doesn't defend the way he used to. And his shot was off, and I think he was forcing things, and he was getting frustrated. And he was frustrated about the Warriors not offering him an extension the way they did Draymond Green. Hell, the way they did Jordan Poole. But it's about timing, among other things, and the Warriors felt like they couldn't do that with Clay until they had made a run at another star player like a Paul George. But it didn't work out that way. They may eventually get someone else, but they kept on telling Clay, we can't do it yet. We can't do it yet. And here's Clay thinking, you know, I'm here with Steph and Draymond from the beginning, helped you win four rings. Yeah, I was a little down last year, but by the way, he shot 41% from three-point range after the All-Star break.
Yeah.
He still had 25 games where he had at least five three-pointers. He's still very much a threat. He just wasn't the same guy. But, you know, it's like one man's refuse is another man's treasure. Dallas is looking at this like, hey, you know, we had P.J. Washington as our third option in the postseason. How'd that work out? Well, they got to the finals, but they feel like somebody like Clay, who's still a terrific catch-and-shoot guy, will be a perfect fit for them. So they're looking at Clay, even as he is now, as somebody they're thrilled to have. So, I you know, the story was from Ramona Shelburne that the last offer Clay presented the Warriors, he was willing to take 2 years at 20 million per. He got 3 and 50 from the Mavericks. I don't think this is ever really about the money. It was just about showing some trust in the player that helped you build that dynasty. And because of timing, because of the injuries, because he was down a little bit, because they wanted to add another player to the roster, but they couldn't quite get it done, they kept on pushing aside Clay. He felt like he wasn't a priority, and I get it, so he had to go. Now, some people will say, you know, they paid him during 2 years of being injured. That's true. But as Clay pointed out, what were you going to do with a guy like that? Were you going to say, oh, well, thanks for the rings, but you're injured now. We're going to let you loose. What kind of a look would that have been? That wasn't going to be what the Warriors organization was about. I think they made a good faith offer there to keep him on. But he did the work. He did the work to come back and be a contributing player in a championship in 22. And then the next year he wasn't that bad. Then he comes up to this past season, and unfortunately for him, it got off to a bad start because I think he was frustrated and things were getting inside his head. You saw the Gumby shoulders. You saw sometimes mentally checking out. In fact, in one game where he famously committed an intentional foul against the Clippers with 40 seconds to go, down 3 points, and the coaching staff exploded. That was a moment where his mind was wandering because he'd been on the bench for 6 minutes stewing. You know, part of me says, and a lot of fans say this, when you saw him play the first half of last year, you understand why he got benched. Well, what did he do after he got benched? He torched Utah with one of his best games of the year. He came back and had a good second half. So, yeah, there were some Gumby shoulders. People were kind of getting a little exasperated with his attitude, but he was performing on the court. People will remember the 0-for-10 game in the play-in game against the Kings, but you don't judge anybody on one game, of course. It's just a sad ending, and I think the Warriors are going to regret it because I think this guy can still contribute. And at 2-40, and you know, he probably should have taken the 2-48 last summer, but he wanted what Draymond got, 4 years. He wanted, you know, the extension that Steph got to feel like he was still valued. But the problem with him, even with Draymond, with all his drama, when he was on the court, the Warriors are still much better defensively and offensively. Analytically, that wasn't always the case with Klay. But he is still a helpful player, and the Dallas Mavericks believe that. And we'll see what happens next year. But I think it's going to come back to hurt them.
It is. I think so. I agree with you. And I think he's a great match in Dallas because with Luka and his passing ability and Kyrie and his driving ability, I mean, that's going to be a really tough team. They already made it to the NBA Finals last year. Yeah. But, you know, you just think about the emotions of it. You really want the fairy tale ending. It's romantic to think about a player like a Derek Jeter playing his whole career with the Yankees, or Buster Posey here in the Bay Area. You know, Ted Williams, when he hit that home run his last game, you know, that's the send-off. That's what you want, but more often than not, we don't see that. We see Joe Montana in a Chiefs uniform. We see Tom Brady moving on from the Patriots, or, you know, Patrick Marleau with the Sharks. So loved by Sharks fans, and then, you know, next thing you know, he's playing for the Penguins, you know, or the Maple Leafs, and, you know, Brandon Crawford more recently, you know, Madison Bumgarner, Tim Lincecum, none of those guys finishing up their career with the Giants. Yep. So, but this one, yeah, it does hurt because you think about the Splash Brothers and what they did and bringing 4 titles. It would have really been nice to just have him finish up his career here, and it's really a shame when you think about it.
It is, and that's a fact of life in the modern business world that is sports. And the other part of it is when you have dynasties, you have egos. And sometimes it goes astray. I mean, look at Shaq and Kobe in L.A. Those guys could have won a couple more titles together, but egos got in the way. Feelings got in the way. Pride got in the way. Klay has a tremendous amount of pride and is a tremendous competitor. But when his body couldn't do what his mind wanted him to do on certain nights, it got a little frustrating. And the other complication for the Warriors, of course, the new rules on the tax apron. And, you know, they're getting down below the tax level for the first time in years, and I think that was a stated purpose for them. But the problem with that is you're dealing with human beings, and not just the dollars, but you're dealing with guys who are tremendous competitors who are, like I said, have a lot of pride in what they do. And when you have that, it gets a little volatile. And if you don't handle it the way they think you should handle it, well, it ends up like this. So was it preventable? I think it was. I think, you know, the Warriors' method of negotiating, which they've done with other players and other people in their front office and coaching and so forth, they should have read the room with somebody like Klay. He's a different sort of cat. And I just think that even though you look at this team the last couple of years and, you know, they weren't that great, they lost in the second round to the Lakers. Then they got bounced in a play-in game. So you're thinking to yourself, all right, well, you know, you got to make some changes. What's the harm in doing that? How much did Klay help with a team like that? But you could have built around that once again for Steph. You could have done that. You could have gone into the tax apron a little bit. My God, what was the Warriors' team value when Steph got here? And what is the team value now? It's exponentially greater now. So I think from the fans' perspective, from my perspective, since it's in my money, you could go back into the tax apron a little bit, even as, egregious a penalty as it might be, and you could make one last run at this. And you owed it to Steph to make it happen. You're squandering the last prime moments of his career. He's still pretty close to being peak Steph. You've got about a year or two to make that happen, and now you're taking away a catch-and-shoot option that might spread the floor a little bit for Steph. So you better go out and find somebody who can do that for you, and I don't know if they can.
Well, that's interesting because if you think about it in boxing terms, it was almost like you took a right cross when you lost Clay, if you're Steph, and then you had an uppercut to the chin when you didn't get Paul George, because
right.
Now you know that was the one guy that you thought, okay, maybe you get Paul George, then things are okay, you can kind of get over it. They don't get Paul George, but honestly, Ray, I'm not going to take the side against the Warriors here because I don't want to trade Jonathan Kuminga. I really think he's going to be a superstar player, and that's up for discussion because there are some folks. I mean, I heard John Dickinson on KNBR the other day just ripping that decision, saying that there's no way the Warriors should have kept Jonathan Kuminga. They should have traded him. They should have gone after Paul George, and it was a whiff. I totally disagree with that. I think Paul George is a great player, but he's 34 years old, and I love the upside with Kuminga. What do you think?
Well, I think the part of the story, too, is that the Clippers didn't want to do the deal anyway. They didn't want to trade with a divisional rival.
Right.
So that may be true, but I don't want to deal that guy. The step up that he took last year was eye-opening, and he's still very young. What is he, just 21?
I think so.
Yeah, just a baby in basketball years, and look at the advances he's made already. I think that's another one. If they let him go, they'd live to regret that, and they'd live to regret it for a decade. No, you don't unload that guy. I want to keep him here. So, they have that, and they have Steph, and let's see what else they can get. I guess they're signing Kyle Anderson. They got DeAnthony Melton. You know, they're getting some bench help, I suppose, but they need one more guy. They need one more threat from three-point range. They drafted a kid who might be some more rim protection for them along with Trayce Jackson-Davis. But I have to have Kuminga in the mix if they're going to move forward in the future.
They are in serious talks to land Buddy Hield in a sign-and-trade with the Sixers. That guy can shoot the three ball. You know, I'm not saying he's a superstar player, but he might be a really good fit for the Warriors.
And a little bit younger. So,
yeah.
And people are talking about Kyle Anderson as not being he's not going to replace Clay. No, he's not meant to. He's a totally different kind of game. It might give him a little more defensive presence, too, and a pretty smart player. I'm okay with him signing it. I don't think it's the end-all and be-all, but I think it's a good addition. DeAnthony Melton, played well against the Warriors in the time I saw him, so that might have influenced their decision. Buddy Hield is another outside shooting threat. That would be nice, but I think, having said all that, they need one other piece to really make any kind of serious run into the postseason for Steph. So we'll see what happens.
There's talk about them aggressively going after Lauri Markkanen with Utah.
Yeah.
That would be great. But again, I mean, you know that Kuminga's name is coming up, and he'd probably have to be part of a deal, you would think.
Yeah, well, if I'm the Jazz, I want him. I mean, if I'm any of these teams, he's got to be part of the deal. And, there's Wiggins, too. So I'm not really sure how this ends up. If they can't include Kuminga in the deal, I don't know how they get somebody like Markkanen unless they go completely outside the box here. You know, and we forgot, and we often do forget about Moses Moody. You know, this is a guy that other teams might want too, but he's also a guy who's made steps forward. Maybe he's going to make another step up next year to help the team. There's a little mix of veteran and younger players here, and that the core is much older now. I want to see those young players step up, guys like Trayce Jackson-Davis, guys like Brandon Bajemski, Moody, and so forth. So it's a tough dynamic. They're sort of in that in-between position where they want to keep it going as far as being contender. They need to get another real threat to get that done, but they might have to get rid of that young core to get it done and, maybe be a contender for a couple more years. And then what happens after that? Now, as I understand it, they're going to have a pretty good position on the draft next year, and the next year's draft is supposed to be much better than this year's. So, you'd have to sit in with the front office with Mike Dunleavy and company and see exactly what they're thinking going down the road. But it's a little tricky position they're in right now. I'd like to see them get Markkanen. I think he'd be a real good fit for the Warriors, but I can't see letting go of Kuminga.
Favorite Clay moment, the 37 points in one quarter. Unbelievable. But I don't know if that's it for me. It's more just the overall. I don't know if I could just pick one moment. For me, maybe it's more of the post-game press conferences. I love watching him play, but some of the funny stuff that he would say.
Yeah, he turned out to be, you couldn't get a word out of Clay when he came out from Washington State when he was in the draft. He was very private, kind of shy guy, but then as time went on, his personality came out. You found out what a sense of humor he had, and then, of course, the paper airplane throwing and the post-game press conferences and all that, and, Rocco the dog and the boat and everything like that. All that, I think, was sort of coping mechanisms to deal with life in this tremendous fishbowl that the Warriors had created, that every team wants to create, where everybody wants to come out and see them. And they were the Beatles of the NBA for several years. Just the personality, he's just, like I said, a different sort of cat, but sometimes intentionally funny, sometimes unintentionally funny. But yeah, you couldn't help be endeared by what the guy brought to the table. And I'll give you a moment that says a little something about Clay. When I was doing post-game shows for the Warriors, there was a time where he was going through a shooting slump, and this is, around 2014, 2015, where he's at coming up to his peak. And, let's set the record straight. Steph doesn't have the career he has without Clay. And Steph acknowledged that in a social media post he made. They had Monte Ellis here, and everybody knew with two smaller guards it wasn't really going to work out, especially guys who needed the ball. And defensively was going to be a problem. Steph needed Clay's defense, taking on that other end of the floor to free up Steph, as well as being another almost equal three-point threat. They were a perfect pair together for many, many years. But, Clay really took it to heart when he'd be in a shooting slump. So after one game where they lost and he didn't have a great night once again, I'm doing the post-game show, and I'm watching Clay Thompson with an assistant coach out there firing shots after the game at Oracle for 45 minutes to an hour.
Wow.
Okay, after the game. He was really, you could tell, he was really troubled by the shooting slump. He took it to heart, and he goes out there, and he does the work. This guy also, on top of everything else, was in tremendous condition to be able to play both ends of the floor. But that speaks to his competitiveness, the incredible competitive fire. Although he seemed like a cool cat in some ways, calm demeanor, there's a fire in that belly that rose him to the level that he was at. Now, I was told later that Clay didn't want anybody to know that he was out there shooting, that maybe I shouldn't be talking about that. And I said, no, I want people to know about it because it shows how conscientious he is. And so that told me everything I knew about the guy. And I said, folks, he's out there shooting. Somebody like that is going to be okay. And, the rest is history. They won four rings after that. The 37-point quarter, I was there that night. Everybody knew the ball was going to Clay. Everybody knew it was going in. It was one of the most unbelievable individual athletic performances I've ever seen in person. The time, and I think he had 11 dribbles during that quarter, too. The time he had 62 points in 29 minutes. I think that was against the Pacers. But I think the top of the list for me was coming back from those catastrophic injuries. When, the very sad night in the 19 finals where he went down and he shot those two free throws. They took him for the MRI. He got to the clinic, and his first question was, did we win? And, it just breaks your heart. I think they would have won that series, even without Durant. I think they would have won it had Clay been healthy, because he was having a hell of a series.
I agree with you. Yeah, I was at that game, actually, and man, the whole arena just went quiet. It was a sad moment. I gotta say, Ray, that Clay to me, in this day and age of players making so much money, and I'm not going to say that most of them don't care about the game. They do, and most of them work very hard at the game, but basketball means everything to Klay Thompson, and it's just so evident. It's just so authentic, and that's sometimes missing in a lot of the sports world, and that's what I'm going to miss about Klay.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who, by the way, had a chance to play where his dad was a radio commentator, and he decided not to do that. Had a chance to play with LeBron.
Yeah, could have played with the Lakers, yep.
Yeah. But, you know, he is, I think, in some ways a basketball purist. He watched very closely the Mavericks run, and he liked what they could do for him. But, yes, I mean, someone like that, you have to understand, being with him day in, day out, seeing him game after game, this guy loves the game of basketball. He was never, you know, one of those, even when he was frustrated and Gumby shoulders, he wasn't a lollygag or anything like that. He gave you the effort. He responded last year with all the criticism and the benching, and he performed much better in the second half of the year. You know, he wants to keep this going as long as he possibly can, because it's not only a great life and it's a great thrill, but it's what he loves to do. And this is what I observe when I see young players in any sport who have talent, but they don't make it. The ones who make it have to love this game. Either they just absolutely love this game, whatever sport it is, because it takes so much to get to the professional level. It's either that, or they've been blessed with incredible talent. I think, you know, Klay had the genes. His dad was an NBA champion, and he was around hoops all his life, so it was in his blood. But you can't teach the love of the game. You can't teach that fire in the belly. That has to be there already, and it always was with Klay. And they're going to build a statue of him outside Chase Center someday. They're going to retire his number, and maybe the statue will have Rocco, his dog, with him.
That would be great.
So, yeah, I mean, he's going to get all the accolades he deserves. And one other thing that irked me is that he wasn't included on the 75 greatest players in the 75th anniversary team.
Yeah, that's bogus.
Yeah, I mean, he was not only a winner of four rings, he was, behind Steph, maybe the greatest shooter the game has ever seen, plus being an elite defender for many years.
Coming up, we'll talk about the San Francisco Giants when the Sports Virus podcast continues.
When it's time for new tires, you want the lowest prices and the best service, don't you? Well, Kane's Tire in San Rafael has you covered on both. Kane's has the lowest prices in Marin County, and they provide the warm and welcoming service that you can only receive from a family-run business. Voted best of Marin for 35 years in a row, Kane's prices beat Costco's prices every time. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street in San Rafael. Give them a call at 415-453-2942. That's 415-453-2942 for Kane's Tire.
Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your 2-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. All right, let's switch gears and talk about baseball. And before we get to the Giants, something that's really been bugging me lately, Ray, is the way the strike zone is being called by the umpires. And I don't totally blame them right now. I think they have to maybe undergo new training. And here's the reason. Catchers these days, when you watch that center field camera, you see that they put up a target and then they drop their mitt down to the ground and then They lift it back up. Almost every catcher does that. I think it's like 95% of the catchers are doing this now. So when they lift it up and they catch the ball, they're moving their mitt, and they could be moving it like a foot from where it is when they catch the ball and getting these strike calls. And I think it's because the umpire's just not used to that yet. I mean, you know, it's been around now a couple of years where catchers are doing this. And the umpires just haven't been trained properly to, you know, not get deceived by this. So we're seeing a lot of bad calls. I'm watching the game yesterday, the Giants and the Braves, and there are two or three just egregious strike calls where you know, the catcher is catching it way below the knees and he's jerking the ball up into the strike zone. I'm not happy about it. I don't know the solution other than umpires maybe getting retrained. What do you think?
Or automatic strike zones.
Well, yeah, the there's that. Yeah.
We need Angel Hernandez back.
Oh, jeez. No.
Said no one. Well, Angel is laughing and saying, hey, you know, these guys are doing it too. Why aren't you getting on their case?
Right.
But, you know, the art of framing a pitch has been part of the catcher's toolbox for a long time. We always praise Buster Posey for his ability to do that.
Yeah.
That's part of it when you're trying to convince the umpire, trying to sell the pitch. That's always going to be a part of the game. But, you know, I guess it's one of those things where it's hard to exactly draw the line where it gets to be a little bit much, but you know it when you see it. And those examples you gave from yesterday, it was pretty obvious. I don't really know what else there can be that can be done, except for, like you say, train the umpires if they're not being trained already. But they just don't seem to, you know, I think their focus is on the pitch, not where the mitt is coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The
eyes are on the ball coming to the mitt and not to the mitt coming to the ball. And so I don't, because you have in your head where the strike zone is, and you want the ball to go into that artificial area that you've drawn, that imaginary area you've drawn in your head. And you can't do that unless you're watching the ball instead of the mitt. Sometimes these umpires, you know, catch on. Some of them do, but not enough. So I don't know if, you know, some intensive training will change that. I don't really know if that's going to work. So many of these catchers do it now, and not enough umpires seem to be catching on. So it may come to the point where we're just going automatic strike zone.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me that catchers even, you know, can get, you know, a subtle strike anymore, because they're doing it where it's not subtle. Like when you mentioned Buster Posey, that was subtle, and then you get that little strike. Now it's you know, the mitt is moving around so much. I don't know that the umpire really could even pay attention to that, because, it, you know, it's definitely, it's deceiving, as I said. I think also it's amazing that pitchers can throw strikes without having a target right there. You know, I mean, they have the target initially and then the mitt is brought down. It's a new way of dealing with it, but I don't know how pitchers do that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, pitchers with ungodly stuff on top of that.
Right.
Incredible movement on their pitches. I mean, the art of pitching has gone through the roof as far as the ability of these guys, and that's why you've seen batting averages go down and so forth, and fewer balls in play, and why Major League Baseball has come up with all these rule changes to try to counter that. But, you know, these pitchers, the way they're trained, you know, when they're younger and the catchers aren't doing all that stuff, I think they're still trained, you know, throw through the mitt, right? But when you get up to a higher level, you're working on a whole lot of different things. So I don't necessarily know if that's what they're looking at right now.
When you think about the Giants rotation, it's really unique this year, because I don't recall a season, Ray, where you've had so many pitchers that could impact the season that are right now not pitching, that are rehabbing, and a second half of the year could be completely different. You're getting a really good contribution, by the way, from Hayden Birdsong, who looks like he's 12 years old, but he looks like a baby-faced kid. But, man, that guy has some really good stuff. But in the meantime, you've got Kyle Harrison, Blake Snell, Robbie Ray, Alex Cobb, all waiting in the wings. They're rehabbing. Hopefully will be a part of the rotation in the second half of the year. It's really hard to determine whether or not this team will be a serious contender. Yeah, I mean, they're going to be contending for the wild card, because everybody is. But whether or not this team, you know, is legitimate to make a run, and it's all based on these pitchers and what they do.
Well, they're one loss out of the third wild card spot, I think, right now. That's the Padres, if my recollection of looking at the standings before we came on. So, you know, they're in a position. They are even though there have been periods this year where they haven't played well at all, where they haven't looked good at all, they've done just enough to stay in this thing. And, of course, again, they're eighth in the hole as we have three wild card spots now. It's a blessing because they're still, I guess you could say, in contention. It's a curse because there are fewer teams out there that are sellers than there have been in the past. A lot of these teams feel like they could still make a run at it. I think for the Giants, their acquisitions are the guys you mentioned that are coming back from injury, and we'll see how that works for them. Mm-hmm. It's hard for them to make major deals because they're relying on a lot of these young players who might have value for other teams now. And it's good. They're finally getting some contributions from this farm system. We talked about this, about a month ago, Joe. The young players are going to have to step up because the veterans are going in and out of the lineup. And that's basically what's happened. If you're talking about a Matos who was player of the week, then he got sent down, now he's coming back, and he's gotten some big hits. Ramos, who may be an all-star. Wisely, who had a walk-off the other night and has done a decent job at shortstop. You know, so on and so forth. And now Lamont Wade is back. Maybe Conforto's bat is heating up. Looks like Soler's bat is heating up a little bit. And you get all these pitchers. And all of a sudden, you're looking at that rotation. And if it's healthy and if Snell comes back and is something close to what he was last year, God, I hope so. He's been a disaster the first half.
Right.
confession, I was one of the people who wanted to have him come here. I thought he was going to be a great fit for the Giants, even though he's only a five-inning pitcher. But the problem for the Giants has been in this first half that they've worn that bullpen thin because they haven't had a lot of five-inning starts. Even that, you know, they've had a lot of these bullpen games. They've had bullpen starters. You get these guys back in the second half that you mentioned, and all of a sudden you have a bona fide, really good rotation. And by the way, Jordan Hicks, who may tire out in the second half because this is his first year as a full-time starter, maybe you can use him in a hybrid role a little bit more and take a little bit of the load off of him and so he can keep his effectiveness in the second half of the year. There's just a number of benefits that could be coming the Giants' way if these guys are close to, you know, peak form. We don't know that yet, but it's you know, what we talked about at the start of the year. A guy like Robbie Ray, by the time he comes back, are they still going to be in contention? That was the roll of the dice. Well, they sort of are, and he's getting pretty close. And Kyle Harrison's coming back pretty soon. Snell, I guess, next homestand. We're going to see where this takes us. But the goal now is because they still have a schedule, the next dozen games that are pretty tough. If they can, you know, hold the fort, you know, put the finger in the dam and keep the water from spilling out, then the next last couple months of the season are going to be kind of interesting.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you the one guy I would not trade if you're, you know, thinking about trading a veteran or two and, you know, maybe if you're thinking about sort of being the selling team if things fall apart, I would not trade Lamont Wade Jr. Oh, my gosh. I mean, he's hitting over .320 with an on-base percentage, I think, right now of .460. And outside of Barry Bonds, I was looking at it. There's only one other player that's gone into the All-Star break with those kind of numbers for the Giants in their history, and it's Dick Dietz back in 1970. So Dick Dietz, Barry Bonds, and Lamont Wade Jr.
Under the radar, Dick Dietz had a hell of a year in 1970. Had one of the best offensive years of a catcher in that era. But you know,
yeah, he was an all-star, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, and the thing about Wade is how many pitches he makes the opponent throw on top of everything else, and
right.
That has a cumulative effect. And, you know, there aren't a lot of Giants hitters we've seen in the last few years who have done that. We're starting to see it a little bit more. They're getting a little bit better at it. But Wade has kind of been the outlier. So it's been very important to have him come back and do what he does. You know, Wilmer Flores has been a contributor, but I think he's one of those guys that I look at and I look at their approach with runners in scoring position, and that's been a problem for the Giants from time to time. And that's one of the things that's held them back is, you know, a poor approach, you know, not understanding what pitchers are going to lean on when they're in a jam. And, you know, they end up chasing pitches. They end up, you know, not recognizing or not keying on a pitch that they need to hit in those situations. So it seems like that's where they are lacking, guys like Soler, who's very much a free swinger anyway. But then you get a guy like Wade back, And the young hitters look at that, and they see how successful that approach is, and maybe by osmosis it helps them too.
Yeah, it's been a fun summer so far. I mean, this team has definitely been up and down, but they've definitely been interesting to watch. Well, Ray, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. Stay cool, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
I intend to stay cool as long as I can. We have to go to Vacaville this weekend. So, I left Arizona to get away from that stuff. Now we're driving right back into it. What the hell? You know, the only thing about Northern California, though, at least the nights are cool. So we got that going for us, which is nice.
That's Ray Woodson. I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to the Sports Virus Podcast on the Believe Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.